So this evening we're going to be practicing an ancient deepening of practice that actually goes back to before the time of the Buddha. In the Vedic times that the Buddha arrived in, they would do a day of fasting and prayer prior to the sacrifices that were so important in their religion. And so when the Sangha began practicing together, they would do their own practice, and then there was some question about whether this was appropriate for their practice. And so the story of the beginning of this Uposatha is found in... Well, actually, this version of it is from the Life of the Buddha by Bhikkhu Nanamoli. The word Uposatha means entering to stay, meaning going to the monastery and or a vihara. And so this is the story of the origin. The origin of the Uposatha days in Buddhist teachings is found in the following story. The occasion was this. The Blessed One was living at Rajagaha, Rajgir, on the Vulture Peak Rock. And at that time, wanderers of other sects were in the habit of meeting together on the half moons of the 14th and 15th and the quarter moon of the 8th and preaching about Dhamma. People went to hear about the Dhamma from them. They grew fond of the wanderers of other sects and believed in them. So the wanderers gained support. Now, while Saniya Bimbisara, king of Magadha, is one of the Buddha's very earnest lay followers, King Bimbisara, was alone in retreat, he considered this and he thought, why should the venerable ones, meaning the Buddha and his Sangha, why should the venerable ones not meet together too on these days? Then he went to the Blessed One and told him what he had thought, adding, Lord, it would be good if the Venerable Ones met together too on these days. The Blessed One instructed the king with a talk on the Dhamma, after which the king departed. Then the Blessed One made this the occasion for a discourse on the Dhamma, and he addressed the bhikkhus thus, the practitioners. Bhikkhus, I allow meetings on the half moons of the 14th and 15th and the quarter moon of the 8th. So the bhikkhus met together on these days, as allowed by the Blessed One, but they sat in silence. People went to hear the Dhamma. They were annoyed and they murmured and protested. How can the monks, the sons of the Sakyans, meet together on these days and sit in silence dumb as hogs? That's a nice translation. Ought not the Dhamma to be preached when they meet? Bhikkhus heard this. They went to the Blessed One and told him. He made this the occasion for a discourse on the Dhamma, and he addressed the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhus, when there is a meeting on the half moons of the 14th and 15th and the quarter moon of the 8th, I allow preaching of the Dhamma. So that's kind of the historical roots. India and many of the surrounding countries at that time had lunar calendars. And so this would be celebrated at least on the full moon and the new moon, every 2 weeks, more or less. But some countries would celebrate it on these quarter moons as well, and sometimes even on the waning and waxing moons. So there are places in Burma where they have six moon observances in a month. And one of the sweet things about practicing this is that right now, all over the Buddhist world, there are people doing the same thing. So just to give you some context, I'll give you the description from Abhayagiri's monastery in Mendocino County of what they are doing this day. October 5th, 2017, Abhayagiri's Lunar Observance Day. Monastics walk for alms in Ukiah and Redwood Valley starting at 9 a.m. There is no morning meditation or work period on the Lunar Observance Days. A small group of monks enters Ukiah and walks north on State Street from approximately 9 to 10:30, accepting offerings of alms food, as is the daily custom in Theravada Buddhist countries. They can be met in the front of the Safeway grocery store. That may not be true in Buddhist countries. Around 9:15 a.m. or in Alex Thomas Plaza in the city center around 9:30 a.m. Another group of monks walks north on East Road from the Redwood Valley Town Center starting at 8:40 a.m. A third group walks along Tongkai Road to the local Fry Vineyards. I picked grapes in that vineyard. We knew the fries. Evening chanting, meditation, taking of the precepts, and a Dhamma talk will take place at Abhayagiri from 7:30 p.m. to 9:45 p.m. So they're practicing right now. The evening continues with a meditation vigil through the night, with sitting and walking meditation as one wishes in half-hour segments. There is an intermission with tea and informal discussion at midnight, then sitting and walking resume until morning chanting at 3 a.m. Visitors are very welcome to attend as much of the night as they wish. So not only at Abhayagiri, but across the Buddhist world, and not just in our tradition, they're practicing this full moon and tonight, this full moon observance. In the write-up, I happened to mention several suttas that have been associated with this. I mentioned the Visakhaposatha Sutta, which is a discourse that the Buddha gave to Visakha, who's one of his, again, one of his really fervent lay followers on the Uposatha holiday or observance. The Karaniya Metta Sutta, which is the version of the Metta Sutta found in the Sutta Nipata. And we'll actually be practicing with that tonight. The Mahamangala Sutta, which is the Sutta on the blessings, the 38 blessings, which we've given talks on here before. And the Ratna Sutta, which I had not seen before. And that's the Jewel Discourse, which is actually the place in the canon where it talks about the three jewels of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So let's take a look at that one first. It actually occurs first in the Sutta Nipata. As you may remember when we've talked about the Sutta Nipata, this is one of the really early writings in the canon, and it has a simplicity that some of the later suttas don't have, and Bhikkhu Bodhi is planning on translating this. There are several translations available now. They're a bit uneven in their quality, but Bhikkhu Bodhi, who's done most of the translations that we use quite often in here, has done a lot of the canon, is going to be doing this, and it's going to be released this fall. So you might be looking for his translation of the Sutta Nipata. This particular translation is by Sada Tissa. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just to give you the idea. Ratna Sutta means jewels, in praise of the jewels of the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Whatever beings are assembled here, whether terrestrial or celestial, let all such beings be happy. Let them, moreover, attentively listen to what is said. Therefore, O beings, do you all pay attention. Diffuse loving kindness towards mankind who day and night bring offerings to you. Protect them, therefore, with earnestness. Whatever treasure there be, either here or in the other world, or whatever precious jewel is in the heavenly worlds, yet there is none comparable with the Tathagata. Tathagata is what the Buddha, the historical Buddha, called himself. In this case, it's being used in this context. This precious jewel is in the Buddha. By this truth may there be peace. The sage of the Sakyas, of a tranquil mind, realized that cessation which is passionless, immortal, and excellent. There is nothing equal to that state. This precious jewel is in the Dhamma. By this truth may there be peace. The Supreme Buddha praised pure meditation, which gives instantaneous results. Well, I'm not sure about that. Maybe back in the day. We need a little more persistence. There is nothing equal to that meditation. This precious jewel is in the Dhamma. By this truth, may there be peace. So really, really beautiful, simple language. And then it goes on. It's a nice sutta and very appropriate for this day. And again, when we start practicing at 9, I brought some chant sheets that you can pick up as we do the cleanup and before we start again, and we'll do some chanting together. We'll do the refuges, the precepts, and the homage to the Buddha. The Mahamangala Sutta we've talked about before, and it really is talking about what is true happiness. That's really the message of the Mahamangala Sutta. Mangala are gifts or blessings, and Maha is great. This translation's a bit odd in that it calls it the auspicious performance. Someone came to the Buddha, a deva came to the Buddha, one of these spiritual beings, came to the Buddha and asked him a question. Many gods and men wishing for well-being have pondered over those things that constitute auspicious performances or great blessings. Tell us what is the highest blessing or auspicious performance. And the Buddha actually gives 38 of these. Some of them are quite practical and everyday, and some of them are talking about complete liberation. So it's a really useful list to look at every once in a while and really to compare these things that the Buddha is saying can really make a person happy. That's the kind of the meaning of these blessings, is that these are the things that will really make you happy in the long run. Compare that to what we're actually cultivating in our own lives. So I'll just give you a flavor for them without reading the whole thing. The very first one is not to associate with fools, but to associate with the wise and to honor those who are worthy of honor. You'll see that teaching quite a bit in the Sutta Nipata, that idea of, remember that the Buddha told Ananda that good spiritual friendship is the whole of the holy life. So that idea of associating with other people as we are tonight, that are sincere in their practice is going to lead to happiness. To reside in a congenial environment. I mean, just think about how fortunate we are to have this space, right? And to be in a place like Sacramento that has many different communities that are practicing Buddhism in whatever way, whether that's Vietnamese Buddhist temple or some of the little tiny temples that we see going in Elk Grove that are in people's backyards or these Western lay groups. We're just very fortunate to be in this place at this time. You know, we have power. We can communicate with people. Our phones are working, unlike some parts of the world right now. So we're really very fortunate to be in this place at this time. And to really recognize that as a blessing, as a cause for happiness. A good all-around education, appreciation of the arts, a highly trained discipline, and pleasant speech. This is the highest blessing. So again, we have access to such opportunities for education, both in Buddhism and in general culture. We have really great access to the arts where we live. Sometimes, we have some really unpleasant things going on in this country right now, and I think sometimes we lose track of really the amazing opportunities that we have for happiness, and really not to take those for granted, but to actually appreciate those and to take advantage of them and to help make them available to others. That's the thing about these blessings, is that they're not made to be held tightly. They're made to be passed along. This one's huge. Supporting one's father and mother. You know, at times that may not seem like a cause for happiness. It can seem like a burden at times. It can seem like a cause of sadness. I know there are people here tonight that wanted to be here tonight that aren't able to because of some care that they're giving for their parents. So it can sometimes seem like that, but just to realize in the long run that supporting one's, the folks that raised us, whether they're biological or not, is really a cause for happiness and a cause for blessing and something that we can pass on. Although, as the Buddha said, you can never repay the people that did that for you fully, bringing us into the world or raising us and or raising us. There's no way that can ever be repaid. So with that little bit of background, folks even in Buddhist countries may not have access to a monastery. You know, we have the nuns up the hill in Placerville. We have Abhayagiri. Those are the two closest to us. There are some other Buddhist centers in the Bay Area. But for those not closely affiliated with a local monastery, this observance can simply be an opportunity to step up one's efforts in meditation while drawing on the invisible support of millions of other practicing Buddhists around the world. This is an essay by Kantipalo on this. And so this kind of gets back to the idea of knowing that there are any number of people over at Abhayagiri right now that are practicing. There are any number, thousands of people that are practicing right now in this way, you know, in Tibet, India, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, certainly, Burma. And that feeling of being part of a larger community, I think, is very nourishing. I think it's very supportive to realize that this isn't something we just made up, or this is not something that was just conceived of 10 or 20 years ago, or even 40 or 50 years ago when our sort of grandfather teachers brought this style of Buddhism to the Western world. This is something that's been going on for a long, long time, and we're quite fortunate to have the opportunity to tap into these practices and to, as best we can, honor these observances that are tied into the natural calendar, the natural flow of the moon rising and waning and coming and going, that impermanence, recognizing that moon might look full tonight, but when you look at it tomorrow, it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 weeks from now, it's going to be very, very different. You may not even be able to see it. So connecting with not only culture around the world, but also connecting back into nature is one of the reasons I think that this full moon, the various lunar observances, the full moon, the new moon, things in between, have persisted over the years, very, very rooted into what we are as a human animal. So are there folks that have done this practice either in Asia or in monasteries here in the United States or elsewhere? Anybody that's done it before?
I'm trying to think what the holiday is. In Tibetan Buddhism, we have a period of time called Sakadawa, where the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and passing away is all during this one period of time, supposedly. But during what, there's about a month, and we usually pick one day, and people will meet at the temple, do the some ceremonies, and then take the eight precepts. Then we'll go out to breakfast, and then part for the rest of the day. But then the idea is that, you know, we don't eat the rest of the day, and that hopefully if it's a weekend, you can spend that day studying and meditating and not doing TV and music and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, we've been doing that annually. And I know it's probably done, you know, worldwide.
Mm-hmm. What time of year is that?
Hmm?
What time of year does that happen?
It's generally late May, early June.
Okay, yeah. About when Vesak is celebrated.
Right. Yeah, it's the same. It's just a different, it's a Tibetan Sakadawa as opposed to Vesak. It's
right.
Yeah, same thing.
Great.
Right.
So each of the full moon observances has a name and a significance, and this is actually quite a special one. Let's see if I can find the name of it. This is Pavarana, Pavarana, P-A-V-A-R-A-N-A. And this actually ends the rains retreat. So, as you know, the Buddha and his Sangha would stay put for 3 months and practice in one place, partly so they wouldn't be out there trampling people's rice fields. They often return to the same place year after year. And then at the end, they would break that rains retreat on this day, on the full moon day in October, what we call October. And they would finish it with a katina ceremony, which if those of you that subscribe to the nuns' email will notice that they just had their katina ceremony celebrating the ends of their rains retreat. At one point, the Buddha thought that the monks were really doing a great job with their meditation, and so he authorized them to meditate for another month, just stay there and meditate for another month. And so sometimes the rains retreat isn't broken until November, but that's 4 months. But so the traditional rains retreats is 3 months, and this is the day when they would break that. So if you can picture these monks and nuns that have been in seclusion for 90 days, you know, sort of finishing that and then coming out to their other duties, it's really quite sweet. And in many monasteries, it's an opportunity for the lay people to come and and bring offerings, which is a really important part of our tradition. What else needs to be said? Actually, I think what I'll do is I'm going to read the Metta Sutta. I know that many of you have it memorized, but I couldn't find a good form of it to print out so we could chant it together. I may actually play a recording of a chant by Dhamma Ruam tonight, later tonight. He's a Sri Lankan that at a young age started chanting some language that his parents didn't recognize. And they took him to the local monastery and found out that it was an ancient version of Pali. And he came to this country and taught some at Insight Meditation Center, Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts. They recorded him chanting this in his way. It's pretty amazing. After a while, he got a little bit tired of the notoriety. Not necessarily here. People were pretty respectful here, but over in Sri Lanka, he was like a rock star. And so he sort of made public statements that he'd forgotten everything and kind of went back to his own life and practice because he was finding that hard to do. So he's a contemporary. He's still alive. But it's just For those of you that aren't going to be able to stay, the Metta Sutta is such a beautiful thing that we will read that. And what I've got here is the version that was translated by the collective of people at Amaravati, which is the Ajahn Chah lineage monastery in England. And this is the same translation that was in the front of Sharon Salzberg's book on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Let's just take a moment to let those words sink in. Every time I read or chant that, I was struck by something different. This time it was radiating, just that word radiating, that idea. Because this is how metta was originally taught. It wasn't taught with repetition of phrases, as we often practice it in this tradition. That was actually codified, you know, several hundred years after the Buddha lived. But this is the way it was given in the earlier teachings, like the Sutta Nipata, just this idea of radiating kindness out in all directions. And it's a beautiful practice, and you can, as much as I love using the phrases for metta, this practice of just radiating it out in all directions is really sweet as well. Anyone else struck by a favorite phrase or something new that surprised them in hearing this?
Yes. No, it was like no attachment to fixed view.
Mm. A rare quality in today's world, yeah? Right. So it kind of goes along with that earlier thing about associating with wise, right? Because they're not going to be able to reprove you unless they're around somewhere watching your behavior. So, yeah. Good. Thank you.
Praise, let no being deceive another, or no being despise another deceive in any state that struck me tonight.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before. The discussion of caring even for the weak or the small was interesting to me. But that was very. I don't know. It's easy to be kind to people that you like or you love or people that are strong, but to extend that to the weak or something that seems insignificant is much harder.
Right. Yeah, that's that unconditional quality of loving kindness that doesn't discriminate. It's like the rain, it falls on everyone equally.
What stood out this time was how in the second part of the sutta, where wishing loving kindness, it covers sort of everyone, near, far, short, tall, big, small, born to be born.
That's right.
Shooting in Las Vegas really affected me very strongly, and hearing that just now, there was some release because it's somehow it's to the people that were shot, and it's to the gunmen, it's to everybody. That's the hard.
It's very hard, yeah.
It's very hard.
Right.
Because, you know, there's a lot. I've really been noticing how much I don't understand. But this quality of metta.
Right.
I can find in my heart.
Right. So it's the training, right? I mean, that's the purpose of this. I mean, all of our practice, but this training in particular is designed to make the boundaries of what we find acceptable or of what we, you know, as was said earlier, of what we can like or dislike. You know, it's the purpose of this practice is to make that larger and larger. And, you know, I mean, the heart can take it all in, but it's very hard to trust that we can take it all in. And be
but the
okay.
Mind doesn't understand it, so there's a part about the heart being able to do what the heart does,
right.
But somehow is grounding. That's what I was feeling when you were reading that.
Mm.
Whereas the mind just flies, at least for me, from that kind of, you know, the images we've all been seeing all week and everything like that. You know, but the heart somehow can hold it.
Right. Yes. Uh-huh.
And we think of being the straight shooter as perhaps not being gentle in speech, but I've always liked that line because we're trying to combine the two qualities of honesty and gentleness. And like Carol, I've always liked the let no one do what that which the wise would later reprove, because it's not very exact. It's not exactly doesn't pinpoint what you're talking about, but you know what they mean.
That's right.
And our system of that phrase just saying that don't do what the wise would,
right.
You, and that we all know.
Right. Which is generally true of Buddhist ethics, right? I mean, it's not this prescription of thou shalt not.
Right.
It's, you know, we undertake the training to just keep working on this stuff day by day and situation by situation, and so leaving it like that. And, you know, the other thing about it is that all of these can be taken on several levels, right? So the wise is not just other people that are wise. It's also that in ourselves that has the ability to recognize what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing.
Right.
That discernment is wisdom. That's the definition of wisdom, being able to discern skillful from unskillful. So the wise would later reprove, I mean, the wise is ourselves. And I think we all know in this society about the self-critic, you know, which is overly active in many, many of us. But it's also good to remember that wisdom, we have wisdom within us, we have access to that, and, you know, if we can recognize while we're engaging in certain behaviors, oh, well, the wise, I have that capacity myself to actually tell if this is going to be helpful or not helpful for both myself and whoever I'm interacting with. Yes?
The part that says, with a boundless heart, is that, would, I guess we'd have to look at the translation, but if that's citta, then that would be quite interesting because you're expanding your mind. You're not just radiating metta, but you're literally radiating your mind in all directions. And it's, well, the word citta is like heart mind. It's
mm-hmm.
not just
right.
It's not just mind. It's
right.
The heart and the mind. So there's no separation between the heart and the mind in the early texts. So
mm-hmm.
so you're expanding your heart and your mind and your consciousness like in all directions, and that's how you radiate metta. You're not radiating metta itself. You're radiating your mind outwards in all directions, and you're making your mind very expansive. So, yeah, that's like a very interesting meditation practice. Just when you think about that, you know, like it sounds that it's not very easy to do. like wow, expand your mind like in all directions endlessly. Like,
right.
If you can really do that, like that's very powerful. You know.
Yeah. I just happen to have the Pali right here.
Oh, is it citta?
Not in that part where it says radiating kindness over the entire world.
Oh, it just says radiating.
Yeah, it just says mettan.
Is there a part that says with a boundless heart?
Yeah, let's find that. Yeah. Outward and unbounded. Yeah, spreading upward to the skies. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. So.
Maybe I'm just remembering some other
yeah,
translation or something.
Right.
Gil's translation is boundless heart.
Which one?
Gil
Franz's translation has boundless heart.
His translation is boundless heart.
Boundless heart.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which word that would be, but we can look at that later.
We'll look at
it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of a boundless heart, it's almost too broad to actually have a sense of. It's like what I have to do is bring it back to a personal, everyday experience.
Right.
Which may be an encounter with somebody on the street, a neighbor. Somebody in the car next to me that I see. That's the same thing, but I just have to work at daily, step by step.
Right. Yeah, I mean, boundless is a high bar.
Right.
Absolutely boundless. Mm-hmm. But some, I mean, the way we can get at that sometimes is just to study in our daily interactions, like you're saying, whether it's the person next to us or, you know, on the freeway or whatever, studying, well, when does the mind and heart feel open and when does it feel closed down? And when it feels open, is there a boundary? Where is that boundary in any given moment? You know, is it extremely tight and closed in and sort of just outside of our skin, or is it a little bit broader than that? So it's something we can actually study as we go through our day, is to watch that opening, closing of our ability to accept whatever's happening in the moment.
Get a sense when it's closing.
Yeah.
Take action.
Right. Anything else that needs to be said for now?
Yeah, just for now, right?
Mm-hmm.
For now?
Yeah.
I was reminded of something that Dennis said to us one night about he monitors his state, his emotions in his mind, and if he's having a tough day or he's a little on edge, he'll maybe pull back and not watch the news, or I think his example was not reading the political news or something, something that'll make him
practice that same
agitated.
Yes.
Yeah.
I sometimes go several weeks reading the funnies and that's it.
Yeah. So I think just made me think of, you know, there's a lot of ugliness that happens in the world, and sometimes maybe it's practicing self-care not to dive into it all.
Yeah, we undertook a practice at home of, we share news with each other as we're looking at it in the mornings, and not sharing bad news until we'd shared at least one good news story, some human interest story or something like that. It takes a while sometimes to even find one. There are places that can be found. Okay, well, I think what I'm going to do, actually, this is all on the fly, but what I am going to do is that I'm actually going to play Dhamma Ruan's Metta Sutta for our closing tonight rather than recite it ourselves, so that those of you that do need to leave can hear it, because it's quite extraordinary. Then we'll... How many people are thinking of staying?
I'm going to stay for at least one more sitting. So
okay. Okay, yeah, so let's do what Barb said. Let's clear off the back chairs. This is our default setting, these front nine. Let's clear those off, the back ones. Leave these front ones, and then if our whole group fits up here, great. If not, we'll bring a couple chairs back. Yeah, let's see how it looks. Want to make as little work as possible. Margaret has generously offered to come back in the morning and finish the cleanup if she doesn't stay all the way. So. Yeah, I looked for it on the way here and it wasn't quite up yet, but yeah, we should check it out. Okay, I'm not sure how loud this is going to be, but let's just see what we got here. This is Dhamma Ruan chanting the Metta Sutta in Pali.
Sakko ujuche sujuche suvacho chasse mudu anatimani santusse koche subaroche apakichoche sallauka. sukino va kemino huntu sabbe satta bhavantu sukhi tatta yeke jipana bhutatti tasava tavrava anvasisa digavai mahantava majjimaras kanukatula dittava eva addittha yechature vasanti avidure bhutava sambhavesiva sabbe satta bhavantu sukhi tattha naparo param nikubbet nati manyet kat chinam kanchi vyarosana patigasanya nanya manyas tukmichiya mata yata niyam puttam ayusa ek putt manurakhi evam ki sat bhutesu manasam bhavi aparimanam mittam cha sapalokasmin manasam bhavi aparimanam buddham adocha tiriyancha asambhadam aviram asapattam tittam charam nisinno va sayano va yavatasya vigatami etam satim aditheya brahmametam viharam idmahu dittim ca anupagamma silava dasanena sampanno kamesu vineya gitam nahi jatu gappasiyam punareti. Karaniyamat kusalena yantam santam padam abhisame.
Thank you for your practice.